All righty, I am going to start. Welcome. So this talk is all about bladder issues in midlife when we come into the queen age years, I like to call them. So basically, they are anywhere from your early 40s onwards, and for many women, actually from their late 30s. So it's a total myth that we're not perimenopausal until we're kind of in our 50s and 60s. In fact, for the majority of women, it starts a lot earlier than that. And I thought I'd start this talk with a couple of statistics just to make you realize that if you are experiencing any bladder issues in particular, you are absolutely not alone. 80% of Western women will experience some form of pelvic floor dysfunction. And even just a tiny bit of leaking when you sneeze is put underneath that umbrella of pelvic floor dysfunction in their lifetimes. So it's incredibly common. It doesn't mean it's normal, but it's incredibly common. And the reason I decided to do this talk in particular quite early on in the game of opening the womenswellbeing.me site is that recently I read a statistic which really just was like, wow. And that is that last year, adult nappies, the sale of adult nappies, outstripped the sale of baby nappies worldwide. So we know we've got an aging population, and we know that actually this is a huge issue. There's more aisle space dedicated to tenor products and incontinence products in the supermarket than to sanitary products. And you might have noticed that. And you might have also noticed the media starting to normalize something that actually isn't normal. It's common, it's not normal. So we're not physiologically designed to start leaking at perimenopause, but unfortunately, because of our lifestyles, a lot of the sitting that we do, the incorrect breathing, the inelasticity of the muscle fibers, this does become a problem for a lot of people. So it tends to come from, in particular for women who have had children, issues tend to stem from birth traumas. So it doesn't matter if it's been 20 years since you had your baby, if you had an extended pushing phase, if you had an episiotomy, which is, you know, the cutting of the perineum, or a severe tear, if you had a forceps delivery where the forceps can often damage the band of muscle that holds your organs in place, if you had a cesarean delivery, all sorts of reasons that trauma can be done to the muscles of the pelvic floor. And when you still have lots of estrogen in your late 20s and your 30s, this doesn't seem to be such a problem. But as we head into the perimenopausal years and our ovaries slowly start to shut up shop, and they do that over between 2 and 12 years. So the average is around 5 years of slowly diminishing the estrogen production and the progesterone production. And so often birth trauma kind of comes back again. And a lot of women in midlife find that leaking issues suddenly appear when they haven't been a problem before. So it's the equivalent of when we're in our 40s, we might start to realize we need a bit of an eye cream because everything's starting to look just a little bit, you know, crinkly and saggy. Well, it's exactly the same down below. The skin is just becoming less elastic. And it's because the estrogen, which is the main component of us producing collagen, is starting to diminish. And there are two kind of main types of incontinence. One is stress incontinence. So stress incontinence is when you might be running and suddenly, whoa, the bladder goes, or coughing and get a little bit of a leak, or sneezing, or jumping. Anything where there is intra-abdominal pressure going down onto the pelvic floor muscles and you simply don't have enough strength there for the sphincters to close. So that's stress incontinence, and it's, like I said, very, very common. And that is a signal that the actual muscles are simply becoming weaker. They're not strong enough. And in those cases, strengthening is what we need. So strengthening the whole of the pelvic floor and also deeper into the pelvic bowl. So not just the sling of muscle underneath the where we have the you know, the sphincters of the urethra, and we've got the vaginal opening, and we've got the anus, but deeper as well, so that we can start to activate around those muscles that hold our organs in place. So that's the strengthening side of things. We also have urgency or urge incontinence. So urgency is more of that sudden, uncontrollable urge to go, where you might not quite make it to the loo, where the bladder, the detrusor muscles around the bladder are contracting inappropriately. And the sphincter muscle of the urethra is opening, and it's not when you want to be going to the loo. So that's urgency. And for many women, they have a mixture of both, unfortunately. So it's not just one thing or the other. It's a mixture of both urgency and stress issues. And often not all the time. So in perimenopause, our progesterone starts to drop, first of all, often from our mid-40s. And our estrogen stays relatively stable until normally our mid-40s. And it fluctuates constantly. Every single day of our cycle, we have a bit more estrogen or a bit less estrogen. It really does fluctuate. So that's why blood tests are not really used as a diagnosis of perimenopause, because literally you'd need to be taking blood tests every other day in order to get a really good picture of what's going on. But we know that as the progesterone starts to drop, on those days where your estrogen is bursting, is peaking, it's the differential between the progesterone and the estrogen which makes a lot of our symptoms worse. So if your estrogen is a little bit higher and your progesterone a little bit lower, on those days, if you go for a run, you might find that the leaking is worse. So as we get to about 45, the estrogen is dropping, but we're also having bigger peaks and troughs. And unless we bring up that progesterone, we're also having bigger differentials between the two. So I hope that makes sense. And then over time, as estrogen is dropping, that elasticity that the estrogen provides is also going down. And so therefore, everything just becomes a lot weaker. So we have two issues also around the pelvic floor muscles, and they correspond, if you like, with the stress incontinence and the urge incontinence. So the two main issues we're dealing with is hypotonia, or basically too much weakness in the pelvic floor muscles. And like I said, that might be after birthing, but it could also be just from lifting weights and having too much intra-abdominal pressure pushing down on the pelvic floor muscles. It might be from high impact exercise. And I know a lot of middle-aged women will start to feel a bit tummy-ish, you know, bit bigger around the tummy in midlife. So suddenly like, right, I've got to get out and do lots of cardio. I need to join that HIIT class or join that running club, but actually have very weak core muscles and therefore end up putting a lot more intra-abdominal pressure down through a structure that's become weakened. So it's actually a bit of a red flag there. So the high impact exercises and unfortunately, like I said, just aging is part of the muscle elasticity declining. And that also leads on to that hypotonia. So too much weakness in the muscle fibers. Now there's the opposite as well. So the opposite is kind of just as problematic, and that's hypertonia. So when there's too much tone, too much tension, and this is something that I'm interestingly seeing a lot of now as we're coming out of lockdown and women are going, you know, back into work, back into sorting kids, back into clubs, sitting a lot outside in the cold, catching up with people in this kind of an overwhelm, and tension tends to, for us women, congregate, I'm going to use that word, around the pelvis. So interesting, this hypertonia is when there is too much tension, and this tension, because the muscle fibers can't stretch and then contract like they should do, they're literally just constantly contracting. This can lead to a feeling of pain and discomfort in the pelvic area. There can be an aching, kind of heavy, dragging feeling. There can be pain with sex or just a real inability to have any kind of penetration. There can be a difficulty in elimination, especially of the bowels. So the bowel can get quite constricted. And in these cases where there's too much tension, doing Kegels or, you know, pelvic floor lifting and contracting exercises, which is often the kind of the medicine that is given, can be very counterproductive. Because if you can imagine, I'm going to do a bicep curl here. If my bicep is always switched on, if I'm always like this, I've got this tension in this muscle here, then when I need this muscle to work, there's nowhere for it to go. And it's exactly the same with our pelvic floor muscles. When we need that sphincter to close, there's nowhere for it to close because it's already squeezing tight. So in this case, we actually need the muscle fibers to lengthen, to fully release and stretch. And that is called down training. That is, and it's calming the central nervous system as well as the muscle fibers, lengthening them, stretching them, which is why yoga can be just so amazing, because it lengthens the muscles and then strengthens the muscles and lengthens the muscles and then strengthens the muscles. So it's also possible to have both in the pelvic floor area. You can have areas of tension and you can have areas of weakness. And like I said, sometimes tension means that there is weakness. So it's quite complicated. And actually, for all of us, it really is amazing to have a pelvic floor physiotherapist. So this is a physiotherapist who is dedicated to and specializes in the pelvic floor area. And if you think this is really the central part of a woman's body, it's incredibly important to know thyself and know what's going on. So you can see a pelvic floor physiotherapist and actually find out where your tension patterns might be or where your weakness is. Also find out whether there might be some prolapse there, where the organs, the bladder, the uterus, or the bowel might have started to drift into the walls of the vagina, and prolapse is called dropping basically into the walls of the vagina. I'll talk a bit more about prolapse in a moment, but just knowing what is going on and being very aware of the red flags, which is basically leaking, any pain whatsoever, any problems with elimination, any discomfort down below, all of these things are red flags. It's our body saying, please don't ignore me. It's a problem here and I really need some attention, some TLC. Sadly, you know, when I hear that statistic around the incontinence pads outselling baby nappies, I'm like, oh my goodness. It's such an issue because there's so much shame around women's bodies, full stop. And it's just madness how little is known still and what is not taught in medical schools to doctors about women's bodies. It's starting to change, but really it does need to be a grassroots, us getting our own knowledge base and then going to doctors and basically demanding that we are listened to and not just dismissed. I could get on my high horse then, actually. Sorry, I was just pulling myself back from that one. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the estrogen more and what the estrogen actually does within the pelvic bowl. Because with estrogen really is, it's kind of like the magic tonic that keeps women powered. And it's really misunderstood at the moment. It's not known about very much, and yet there are about 400 different pathways within the body that estrogen is responsible for. The female brain is very estrogen rich, whereas the male brain is very testosterone rich. And interestingly, it's only been in the last couple of years that scientists have started to do research into the female brain and not just assume we are little men. So a lot of the antidepressant medications, etc., which were designed for men essentially because women were too unreliable hormonally to do testing on, actually might not be so great for women because of our estrogen-rich brains. Similarly, our hearts are very estrogen-rich. Our bones are very estrogen-rich. I'm going to do another talk about osteoporosis in the future, but we need estrogen in order for our bones to regenerate. And the pelvic bowl, the whole pelvic bowl, is very rich in estriol, which is a type of estrogen. We have three types of estrogen, and the estriol is what really starts to diminish in midlife. So it's not just about stress incontinence and urge incontinence. When we start to lose the estrogen, we can also find that just everything starts to atrophy down there. So women often will have a lot more UTIs, and sadly, quite often will just get series after series of antibiotics, when actually what they need is a bit of estrogen in order just to stabilize and strengthen and so it's not so thin, the bladder, and also the urethra. So it's less likely to have bacterial overgrowth there. We're more likely, like I said, to get the organs prolapsing into the vagina, because the vaginal walls themselves just become less elastic. They become thinned out, stretched out. They're not as thick as they used to be, not as robust as they used to be. Skin around the whole pelvic area, internally and externally, become a lot more easily infected. So thrush can become a problem. And similarly, it can literally be there's not enough estrogen to keep the pH balance within the vagina steady. And rather than using, you know, lots of different rounds of Canesten cream, for example, it could be that some estrogen will help just normalize and stabilize the pH of the vagina. And like I said, can really help with UTIs. So all of this stuff is underneath the umbrella of pelvic floor dysfunction. I was wanting to talk a little bit more about prolapse, just because I think so many people don't know what it is and are a bit shocked when they find out they've got it. These days, or recently, urogynecologists are starting to say that almost all women over about 50 will have some degree of prolapse. So they are saying some degree, like stage one, is normal. And so, you know, really, yes, we all need to be strengthening the pelvic floor muscles and being aware of how to have good pelvic health, but they're not now saying, oh, you know, big alarm bells, you've got prolapse. So what happens is, as the muscle fibers of the vagina start to weaken with age, and as the structures, this is called the levator ani, which is structure of band of muscle that holds the organs in place, starts to become less elastic. If we add intra-abdominal pressure, i.e. jumping or running or HIIT classes, etc., from the top, and we don't actually have good strength underneath, in this carriage underneath, the pelvic floor muscles, then the organs can start to get pushed and shoved out of their proper place. And I've got my little prolapse chicken here. So if you can imagine, I've got no strength in my undercarriage, and I'm doing a sit-up, for example, or a plank, or a big sneeze, and there's this intra-abdominal pressure from around the midsection. It can literally push things, our organs, down into the weakest area. Because basically from our diaphragm, our lung diaphragm, to the bottom of the pelvis, the pelvic floor, it's like a big canister. It's like a big balloon, if you like, of content. And we have the deep transverse abdominal muscles at the back, and we have the multifidi extensor muscles at the, transverse abdominal muscles at the front, the extensor muscles at the back. We have the pelvic floor at the bottom, and we have the diaphragm at the top of this kind of canister, if you like. And like I demonstrated with the chicken, if you kind of squeeze, that pressure is going to go to the weakest point. So for one, some women, if they have a diaphysis recti, they've got a very weakened seam down the center, too much intra-abdominal pressure can lead to an opening of the recti muscles, and for a little bit of a it's basically a type of prolapse of a bit of intestine starting to poke through. So just the word has just gone from my brain at this moment in time. What is it called? I can't remember. So anyway, so the weakness of that set. So basically, we need to learn how to regulate this pressure, which basically it's yoga, it's breathing, knowing how to breathe, and also look after, especially the undercarriage, because prolapse organs, once your organs have prolapsed to a point where they're starting to come out of the vagina, which in medical terms is a stage 3 or 4, then that is a totally different kettle of fish than to when the organs might be prolapsed, but are still inside of you. When they're still inside of you, there's an awful lot that can be done to manage symptoms and to even strengthen and to maybe improve and maybe even heal prolapse. One of the red flags for prolapse is starting to leak. So that's why I say, please, 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 if you have started to leak while you're running, especially if you suddenly have a big gush, then that is a red flag. It cannot be ignored. You cannot just put your head in the sand and think it'll get better on its own. It won't. And another scary statistic is that most women go into nursing homes because of incontinence issues. Almost all women stay in nursing homes because incontinence issues have become worse. So it's not something that we can leave until later in life. We've really got to do something about it now in midlife. So the estrogen dropping, the vagina becomes thinner, weaker. It's not just you. It's not just you. And this also affects the tube, the urethral tube. Hang on, where are we going? Here we go. The urethral tube also becomes thinner and a little bit more rigid. And what we want is a pliable tube. So it looks a little bit like a nice pliable hose. And as the estrogen starts to drop, that pliable hose becomes a lot more rigid. And because of that, it can also mean that it doesn't close properly, the sphincter muscle, and then the actual urethra doesn't properly operate. So you can end up having a more difficulty emptying the bladder and also emptying the bowel. So I just wanted to move now on to bowel disorders, disorders in inverted commas, but actually constipation is the main driver of urinary incontinence. So unfortunately, once our estrogen, our progesterone starts to drop, we're much more likely to get constipation as well, because the progesterone in particular, it smooths the muscle lining. And so once that starts to drop, we're much more likely to suffer with IBS, with digestive issues. A lot of people suddenly find that they can't tolerate gluten and casein, like become lactose intolerant around midlife. And the bowel can become a lot more sluggish. And because everything within this pelvic bowl is so squashed together, like our bladder sits right snug up against the uterus, and the uterus sits right snug up against the rectum, and the tubes going down are all squished in together as well. So when there's an issue with one, i.e. the rectum is all full and you're a bit constipated, then it can start to make the detrusor muscles of the bladder way more unstable. And if the poor bladder doesn't have enough estrogen to be a little bit stronger and more robust, she becomes way more agitated, and she's much more likely to start to contract inappropriately. And when she contracts inappropriately, the sphincter of the urethra will open, because these guys work together in tandem, the detrusor muscles of the bladder and the sphincter to either open or shut. So a really big component in management of incontinence is to make sure that your bowel stays working well. So it's all about bowel health, which links into gut biome, which links into dietary changes. And I'm going to be talking a lot about that next week with Nikki Williams, who is an absolute extraordinary nutritionist and midlife women's health proponent. But if I can just say this in this talk, that bowel issues, any kind of issues with constipation, with IBS, even with adhesions and things around the bowel area, any scar tissue, this can all lead to issues and instability of the bladder. So everything's, like I said, really squashed together in there and really affects, you know, the whole area is affected if one area is not working well. And another little statistic here, in the US, half, so 50% of all women over the age of 50 experience frequent urinary incontinence or urge issues. And actually one in five women over 40 experience fecal incontinence. So it is incredibly common. Like I said, it's not normal, but it's very common. So let's talk a little bit more about the detrusor muscles of the bladder, since this talk is mainly about the bladder. It's important to know that the brain links irritation in the detrusor muscles to the need to go to the loo. So the detrusor muscles of the bladder, so if you think the bladder sits here and it's created by these detrusor muscles, they're called, they work in tangent with the sphincter at the bottom, your urethra and your sphincter, to allow you to go to the toilet or not go to the toilet. When you don't want to go to the toilet, you close the sphincter muscles. So the way it works is brain is told, oh, bladder is getting a little bit full, or bladder, detrusor muscles are starting to get agitated, need the loo. And so the sphincter muscle will open as the detrusor muscles go and start to spasm. When the detrusor muscles are relaxed, brain goes, don't need the loo, and the sphincter is closed. So they work in tandem. Squeeze the bladder, the sphincter muscle relax, and you can go to the loo. Bladder relaxes, sphincter muscle closes, you don't go to the loo. And there are loads of reasons why that operation between the brain and your bladder can get skew-iff. And some of them are trained in us as young kids when we're kind of taught, and we tell our own kids to do this as well. Just go to the loo before we go out. Do a squeeze wee. And the trouble is, then over time, the brain starts to go, oh, front door means I need the loo. And I can't tell you how many people, how many people have this issue of, they're fine, they don't need the loo. And suddenly, as the car draws into the driveway and they see the front door, suddenly need the loo. And it's called the key in the door, key in the door urgency, where key in the door, oh my God, I need the loo, can I make it to the toilet? And it's because the brain's going, front door, oi, squeeze wee, need the loo, I'm going to open, you know, that sphincter muscle's going to open. So big message here is, don't say to your kids, go do a squeeze wee before we go out of the house, because we're basically training them, just like we've been trained, to not trust that our bladders can hold enough urine. So bladder training. We should be able to last at least 2, maybe 3 hours between going to the toilet. But diet and medication and constipation, all of these things can cause the detrusor muscles of the bladder to become unstable and therefore not last that 2 or 3 hours. And of course, overnight, we should be able to be dry overnight completely. So the normal desire for us to go to the loo, the normal first signal that we need to go to the loo comes when our bladder is about half full. So it's about 150 mils in the bladder. Now, the trick is to ignore that first, oh, I need the loo, ignore it. Your bladder's only half full. So that very first feeling of, oh, I need the loo, we try and ignore that. We want to be in control of the bladder rather than the bladder being in control of us. Actually, when our bladder is about 300 mils full, so that's just over a cup or so, that's when we'll go, oh, yeah, no, we do need the loo. Yeah, we'll go to the loo now. And hopefully it's been 2 to 3 hours between loo breaks. So when you are going to the loo, if you count how long your stream of urine is, that's giving you a little clue as to how full your bladder actually was. So if you are counting Mississippis, I call it Mississippis, that'll give you like a second. So starting from the beginning of when you do a wee, if you're counting one Mississippi, two Mississippis, and if that's it, two or three or four Mississippis, then your bladder is only about 150 mils full or less. And actually, you probably should have just tried some techniques, which I'm going to tell you about, to override that first sensation. If you get to about 6 to 8 Mississippis, you know, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five Mississippi, six Mississippi, about there, seven Mississippi, eight, that's about a regular normal flow. If you're going to like 14 Mississippis, then your poor bladder is being really stretched, and you might want to try and go a little bit before that. So what we can be doing to start to train the bladder so that it doesn't just open that sphincter is really important as well. So a couple of things. Don't, whatever you do, drink a lot at night but not during the day, or little in the day hoping that you won't need the loo, because dehydration is a real problem, especially for recurrent UTIs. So instead, little bits of water throughout the day, and stop drinking so much water a couple of hours before you want to go to bed. A top tip is also to lie down a couple of hours before you go to bed, lie down with your feet up. So in yoga, we do the Viparita Karani, feet up the wall or over the edge of the bed, and just kind of pump your feet or twirl your feet or a combination of both. This gets the kidneys working. So hopefully you'll be able to go to the loo before you go to bed. We also have the little trick, which I teach in classes, of the quick flicks around the sphincter muscle of the urethra. So as I said before, the detrusor muscles of the bladder, you think about the bladder here, and the sphincter at the bottom, they work in tandem. So if our bladder is starting to spasm and our sphincter muscle is wanting to open, what we can do is we can do preemptive quick flicks. We can squeeze the bladder, lift it slightly, squeeze the sphincter shut and lift slightly and release it. Squeeze it, lift it, and release it. Squeeze it, lift it, release it. So you want to do about 5, squeeze, release, squeeze, release, squeeze, release. And I like to imagine it's literally like a hose pipe. You're squeezing it shut, you're lifting it up, releasing it. Squeezing it shut, lifting up, releasing. That little action there is telling the detrusor muscles, chill out, relax, stop spasming. And if at the same time you can be breathing out, sending a long, smooth exhalation out and sending signals of relaxation down into the pelvis, what we're doing is we're going into the parasympathetic nervous system. So we're overriding fight and flight, squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. And instead, we're going into that rest and relax system where the bladder can just chill out and stop spasming, and the sphincter can close. So that's why I really emphasize breathing work in our yoga classes. One, because we are better able to get a good pelvic floor contraction when we use the diaphragm and the pelvic diaphragm together. But two, a really long extended exhale puts us into that rest and digest state. So it's kind of like our super weapon to calm down, calm everything down. And it's also because, just that scientifically, as you know, that when we extend the exhale, we stimulate the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is that connection between the brain and down into the gut and also into the pelvis. And the only way it's stimulated is on an exhale. So if you're somebody who's breathing quickly all the time and always on, then chances are you might also be experiencing a lot more of that urge issues, because that state when you are constantly switched on and adrenalized is not conducive to the vagus nerve being stimulated and calmed, and therefore to the detrusor muscles around the bladder being nice and calm. So hopefully that makes sense. So when you're on the toilet, a couple of tips here. One is use a squatty potty. So a squatty potty basically lifts your feet up so that your knees come up and so that you are more in a squatting position. And that's my hand here is your body and my other hand here is your knees. More of a squatting position than if you're sitting straight up. And when we're in a squatting position, what happens is the tubes, i.e. the urethra and the vagina and the anus, they poke straight down, as opposed to when we're sitting, they kind of tuck underneath us on an angle. So it's way more conducive to having good bladder and bowel flow and elimination. If we're in a squatting position, it opens the pelvis up and it allows the pipes to go straight down, to put it in a mechanistic term like that. So using a squatty potty is a really good idea. We are designed to squat when we eliminate. We're not designed to sit like we're on a throne. The other thing is no straining, and a squatty potty can really help, like I said, because it puts a pipe straight down, it can stop that need to strain. The straining really can contribute to the pelvic organs prolapsing into the vagina. Straining can also contribute to hemorrhoids, and it's not a good look long-term at all. So we really want to not strain. So instead, when you're on the loo, imagine you're laying an egg. Yeah. So just kind of soften everything, use an exhalation, a calm exhalation, just to help everything relax and soften. And after you've been for a wee, et cetera, afterwards, so not during, but afterwards, try doing some of your pelvic floor lifts. So a pelvic floor full contraction is using both the back and the front of the pelvic floor muscles. So your anus and your urethra. And because you're drawing both in and up, you also kind of lift up the vaginal muscles as well. Everything gets drawn in and up. And you want to do that after you've been to the loo, not during. So don't try and stop yourself weeing, or at least not very often, because that can lead on to UTIs. So we want to, on a breath out, because we want to work with the diaphragm and the pelvic floor together, see if you can feel like you're stopping yourself weeing and stopping yourself passing wind at the same time. Draw in and up, and then just completely relax. Imagine you're laying an egg. And then again, on an exhale, drawing in and up, and then relaxing everything as if you're laying an egg. So that relaxed. I call this basement level. So right down. And we've got fast twitch muscles and we've got slow twitch muscles. So we've got different types of muscle fiber and you want to be working both. So the fast twitch muscles are over about a second or two. So you just draw in and up and then release down. Exhale in and up and release down. Those are the fast twitch. Slow twitch is that sustain. This is what's going to give you the muscle bulk. This is what's going to really start to bulk up the sphincters. So those same thing, but it's just longer. So you just do a few breaths out, you draw in, you pause, you exhale again, you draw in and up a little bit more, you pause, you see if you can draw in and up a tiny bit more, you see if you can hold it. So we're looking for about 7 seconds or so holding, and then slowly, slowly releasing down. And again, imagine you're laying an egg, that kind of relaxation. And ideally, as long as you're not having tension issues, so I'm going to caveat it that pain or elimination problems. So if we've got more of laxity issues, we want to be doing probably 10 fast ones and 10 slow ones at least once a day. So big lifestyle things that we do need to take into consideration is what we eat. So like I said, next week I'm going to be talking more to Nikki Williams about what sort of things we need to eat. But the big thing is to make sure that the bowel is eliminating well. We can end up having too much estrogen in our system if we are constipated, because the kind of the bad estrogen can get recirculated, reabsorbed. We can also end up having a lot more inflammation if we're constipated. So some things that we should be doing just briefly is upping our good fats, that's kind of like the avocado, the salmon, the olive oil, the coconut oil, the nuts. So these are the seeds. These are the things, the good fats that actually create the hormones that we need. So cholesterol, good cholesterol, is what actually creates the hormones. Yeah, so it's interesting to know that our hormones are created from good fats. And it's totally, totally wrong in midlife to go on a low-fat diet. We actually really need good fats in our diet. You're not going to lose your belly fat by cutting out good fats from your diet. The other thing is to massively increase your dietary fiber. So really almost going over the top with the cooked green vegetables, the above ground vegetables, because that fiber is going to be what helps to keep the stool moving through the body properly. Unfortunately, we kind of need to cut down alcohol. And most of you will probably have found that, you know, one or two glasses of wine now make you feel like you've had a whole bottle. Whereas, you know, you used to be absolutely fine with having several gin and tonics. Now it just doesn't work. And that's because in midlife, our liver is working so hard and it will prioritize processing your hormones and things over processing toxins like alcohol. So because we need those hormones, it will literally prioritize one over the other. So that means that we'll have more alcohol in our systems, we'll feel worse. The other thing is to cut down, if agitation of the bladder, if detrusor muscle agitation is a problem, you're finding that urge issues are a problem, cutting down the irritants. And for many of us, the biggest, sadly, is caffeine, is coffee, tea, chocolate, which is just dreadful. But, you know, it doesn't mean getting rid of it, but just cutting it down, being very mindful that this might be an agitation for your bladder. Okay, so I just wanted to talk about the conservative management, what you can be doing. I talked about a few things already, including consciously stimulating the vagus nerve. This is one of the reasons I put the chill out tent into the women's wellbeing space. So there is a place to go to do guided meditation, to do restorative yoga, and just to calm the system down. This is a big, big issue in midlife. We have to know how to de-stress, to stop the revving. The revving ends up making our adrenals produce cortisol and not the hormones that we need, because the adrenals end up taking over a lot of the hormone production when our ovaries start to shut up shop. So really important to learn to be able to consciously go into that rest and digest parasympathetic nervous system state. And like I said, biggest thing, just slow your exhalation down, slow it and stretch it. So, so important. The conservative management of constipation, and also you're looking after that pressure downwards. So it's called the intra-abdominal pressure downwards. And I showed you with the chicken before, when we don't have enough strength at the bottom and we're squeezing from the center. For example, if we're doing sit-ups or planks and we're squeezing from the center without first lifting up through the pelvic floor muscles, then we can end up putting lots of pressure down. So, well, I think all women should know about this technique called the knack. And the knack is simply drawing in through the pelvic floor muscles and zipping up slightly before you go from sit to stand, before you lift something heavy, before you jump, and being able to do that quickly before you sneeze. So this is something that I teach in classes. I teach in most classes because it's such an important thing. And if you just practice it, start practicing it now. So if you're sitting down, and it's really important that you might mention this to older relatives and things as well. When you're sitting down, you're going to stand up. That's actually a lot of our intestines and our organs. They weigh a lot, like 20 pounds. So as you're going from sit to stand, that gravity pushes that weight downwards. And if we haven't sort of lifted the pelvic floor muscles first, if they're weak, the constant pressure of our organs dropping down, of our intestines and organs being pushed downwards, can make them displace into the vagina, into those thinning walls of the vagina. So consciously, kind of shuffle your bottom to the front of your chair, push your weight into your heels, draw in through the anus. That's the easier part of the pelvic floor to access. You draw in through the anus, and then as you lift up, you exhale. So as you lift up, your anus is lifted. That's going to get the rest of the pelvic floor just kind of activated. Your diaphragm, your lung diaphragm, is pushing the breath out of your body as you exhale. And because we've got the synergistic link between the diaphragm and the pelvic diaphragm, the pelvic floor and the deeper muscles, as you exhale, we have a natural lift through those pelvic floor muscles anyway. So exhale on exertion, whether that is going from sit to stand, whether you're lifting something heavy, whether you are, putting your shopping from the trolley into your car, whatever, exhale to lift, then you're much more likely to avoid putting pressure down. Same thing, if you're going to do a plank, you want to exhale, draw in the pelvic floor muscles, slowly move into that pressure through the tummy. What else? If you're about to sneeze, in that fraction of a second before you sneeze, lift up through the pelvic floor. So as the intradermal pressure pushes downwards, you've already got that lift. So I hope that makes sense. If you're at all not clear about that, if you go into the library section, then I've got breathing techniques. I've got explanations of this in the breathing category, also in the pelvic floor toning category. So you can look for little examples and how to do this in those sections. Now, the gold standard is really to also use a topical estrogen cream. So the estrogen starts to drop off midlife. And we historically, up until about 100 years ago, or less than 100 years ago, we died by about 55 or 60. We didn't actually lift, we didn't live beyond midlife. And suddenly, I want to say suddenly, in the last 100 years, we've started, because of our diets and because of our medication and stuff, we are living another 30, 40, maybe even 50 years after the menopause, and living all of that time without this essential hormone, the estrogen, can be quite devastating for our brains, for our hearts, for our bones, and in this case, for our pelvic floor muscles and the vaginal walls and the sphincter muscles. So you can get from the GP a very, 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 I cannot stress how incredibly low dose topical estrogen cream, which is not systemic, which means it does not go into the bloodstream. It's not like taking HRT if that's not your bag. If you don't want to take HRT or you can't take HRT for whatever reason, using topical estrogen cream or an estrogen pessary that goes into the vagina and slowly and over time releases into the area can profoundly, and I cannot emphasize this, and it can profoundly affect the tonacity, the tone, the elasticity of those pelvic floor muscles, of the vagina walls, of the sphincters, keeping them nice and plump and able to close properly. Estrogen is very, very intricately part of the detrusor muscles in the bladder. So if you have an overactive bladder, using a topical estrogen cream can just calm that that spasming right down. It creates a much more pliable urethra. Like I said, it's the estrogen that, when that dries up, the actual urethra dries and becomes rigid. To keep that urethra pliable, a bit of topical estrogen cream can really help. The perineum, the area between the vagina and the anus, where a lot of women have had episiotomy scarring or tearing scarring. And when the estrogen starts to drop, the whole area can, some people's scars start to split open and become very thin and very agitated. The whole area can become quite dry and very itchy, incredibly itchy. And if you think about, if you've got dry skin in your face and you just never, ever put moisturizer on, it can nearly get quite itchy and dry and agitated. exactly the same down below. So a topical estrogen cream, which is an estriol cream, can be a life changer. And I looked last night at the cost of this. It is £1.19 for a month's supply of estrogen. And yet urinary incontinence drugs, so drugs that do, you know, to calm the bladder down, something, it was several hundred pounds a month. And I'm just like, what? This is insane. Like, our GPs need to have training in perimenopause at med school and learn about the extraordinary implications of using HRT, modern HRT. I'm talking about modern HRT, not the old synthetic stuff, which has changed so dramatically. The difference to women's lives just really does need to be taken into account. And like I said, even if for some reason you can't take systemic HRT or you don't want to, then still using a topical, which means just being able to spread it on the vulva area inside the vagina, or if that's not your bag, you can just literally get a pessary to do a slow release from inside the vagina, can really mean the difference between organs potentially prolapsing because the vaginal walls are stronger, can mean the difference between bladder incontinence becoming a problem, can mean the difference between having UTIs all the time or not, having thrush all the time or not, being really itchy and uncomfortable down below, and potentially being misdiagnosed with all sorts of vulval problems when actually it's just you need a bit of estrogen. So that's something that we can just ask for our, from our GPs. It's called Ovestin cream, the one that I use, and I think it's probably the one that a lot of people use simply because it can be used inside the vagina and externally as well, whereas Vagifem and some of the other brands are just internal and maybe they don't have enough use externally. And the external stuff can be the biggest problem for many people. Like I said, it's not systemic HRT. So if your GP doesn't know that, find another GP who has done specific HRT and menopause training. It's really important that you do not get fobbed off from a GP who doesn't know that there is a difference and doesn't know how low dose it is and how safe it is. It is 100% safe from all the clinical trials that have been done. And it really makes a massive difference. One urogynecologist that I was talking to said to me, if she could make it standard practice that every woman from around 42 or 43 used this cream, then she reckons the incidence of prolapse organs, of problematic urinary incontinence would dramatically fall. And remember, like I said, 80% of us will experience some form of pelvic floor dysfunction in our lifetimes. It's not an uncommon event at all. So that, like I said, gold standard is to use something like the Ovestin cream, but also to strengthen those pelvic floor muscles. It needs to be like brushing your teeth, ladies. It needs to be a daily thing, not a big deal, but we can't get away with just expecting our bodies to operate like they did in their 20s, our 20s and maybe 30s. We need to start managing constipation. We need to start managing our diets. We need to get the good fats in there. We need to start doing our pelvic floor strengthening exercises. If we have tension patterns, we need to learn how to release those tension patterns so the poor muscles can get stronger. Yeah. So I think I've pretty much covered everything I wanted to cover. This talk has ended up being nearly an hour. There's so much to say about perimenopause and there's so many things that we kind of need to know. So hopefully that this has been helpful. Please send me a message with any questions that you have got and I can answer them either in classes or in the chat room forum. And I wish you all well. So thank you, thank you, thank you.